first 18 years of life were spent growing up in Wisconsin. And I happened to be growing up in a place that at that time, in the second half of the 30s, 40s, and a year or two in the 50s, that was totally depleted of wildlife opportunity. And came to Montana in 1953 because I simply had an attraction to nature, which led to wanting to hunt and to fish and to trap. And that led me to Montana State in 1953. I got a couple degrees in fish and wildlife management, a little military time in between, and then, you know, sort of my primary career with fish, wildlife, and parks. So I've kind of been addicted to the outdoors since birth. None of it had anything to do with, say, family traditions.
What is it about the outdoors, whether it's hunting or just being out there and enjoying the peace? What is it that's the draw, the rush for you?
Well, it's hard to define. It starts with a natural curiosity and leads to a genuine interest and ultimately becomes a passion.
Tell us about the genesis of this Montana Outdoor Hall of Fame. Its purpose aside for just a moment, where did this idea come from?
In October 13th, 2012, I was invited to give a banquet speech at the 7th induction of the Wyoming Outdoor Hall of Fame. It was in Cody, Wyoming. And so I went down to Cody to give a banquet speech for their induction ceremony. And I looked at their material, and then I thought, holy mackerel, in Montana, we've got some exceptional people in our history and in our contemporary advocacy for the outdoor amenities that we really should do something similar here. And in Cody, I gave the banquet speech on the 13th of October, 2012, and in its preparation, I realized or noticed and then incorporated it into my presentation that that day was one day short of the 100th anniversary of Theodore Roosevelt taking a bullet during the Bull Moose campaign, an assassination attempt. And he was in that campaign to protect the reforms that he had instituted during his presidency. And it didn't kill him. In fact, it didn't even interrupt his schedule. It lodged a quarter inch from his heart, and he went and gave a speech on progressive politics as part of the 1912 Bull Moose campaign. And I thought, there is so many fascinating stories and people involved in the restoration of wildlife to North America. And that this Hall of Fame idea that I basically borrowed from Wyoming would be a way of recognizing those people and teaching their stories.
And this Hall of Fame, would it be a physical building like the Baseball Hall of Fame or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or what?
Well, it's going to start out, as a collection of information and stories initially stored with modern technology we have, the Montana Historical Society and other places. We envision sort of a mobile exhibit that we could take to the annual events or meetings of groups that were interested and just start telling that story over and over again and surfacing through communications, with Montana people, individuals that deserve recognition and deserve to have their stories told.
Do you have any examples? I realize the official nominations, that's a ways off, but what sort of stories?
Let me give you an example. Granville Stewart comes into Montana in 1857, and he's a miner, a rancher, a farmer, a merchant. He does all these things, that the civic leaders would do during pioneering years. He leads the vigilantes eventually. But in addition to that high-profile kind of activity, he does his best, he and his brother James, to start protecting Montana wildlife. The first thing he talks about when he rides over Moneta Pass in 1857 was the abundance of wildlife and the condition of the land. In 1864, his brother James and he are both in the Montana Territorial Legislature. They pass a bill to restrict taking of fish to a hook and line because they were seining them and otherwise, you know, getting them out of the creek any method they could. The pioneers and ranchers, or miners at that era. That legislation passed the Montana Territorial Legislature in 1864. That was 12 years before Custer dies at the Little Bighorn. Now, that is a deep conservation ethic root that I think is worthy of taking note of. In 1872, Granville puts through a bill trying to stop the slaughter of buffalo and other wildlife. They don't have a conservation infrastructure in those years. And so in that period, we turned Montana into the boneyard of a continent. An example of that would be writings of Theodore Roosevelt, who has his conservation epiphany, basically on the Montana-North Dakota border area. But he wrote of a ranchman who made a journey looking for open-range grazing opportunity from basically the Montana-North Dakota border to along the Milk River. And it was described as a journey of 1,000 miles. So if you go 500 miles out and 500 miles back up the Milk River, you probably come within sight of Glacier Park from roughly Medora, North Dakota. And then Roosevelt wrote, to use the ranchman's own words, I was never out of sight of a dead buffalo and never in sight of a live one in a journey of 1,000 miles. And today, you know, we have deer in our cities, bears in our orchards, and goose dung on every golf shoe in Montana. That was not an accident. And this program, or this idea, seeks to collect, recognize, and then tell the stories of the people who made contributions at every level in Montana culture, whether it's the arts or the sciences or, you know, land use.
So then it's designed to both, or is it either or, honor the past or educate for the future?
Both of those things. Yeah. And, of course, the way you do that is to find a way to catch the public's attention and in that process do a little education and storytelling. You know, for the most part, when you study the history of a place, it's always presented as to how we exploited that place. You know, first came the fur trade, then came the miners, then came the agrarians. And yet if you walk up to a Montana person and said, describe Montana to me, they would invariably start with the wild places we nurtured and preserved and restored.
And as you well know, Mr. Posowitz, one person's nurtured resource may well be another's terrible idea. Take the wolf, for example. How do you and your colleagues go about appeasing everybody with a project like this, or can you?
Well, you know, the only guy that would maybe appease all interest groups wound up getting crucified. So that's not our objective. Our objective is to simply tell the truth of our history and to point out that these amenities we so cherish today did not get to our generation by accident. They got to our generation by people, both professional and volunteer, doing good things, sometimes on a mega scale and sometimes on just a very small local scale. But it was a conservation ethic that is carried in the Montana culture, and it starts with when Granville Stewart rode in here in 1857.
How much would a Montana Outdoor Hall of Fame cost, and how will it be funded?
Well, we currently have a challenge grant from the Cinnabar Foundation to collect enough money to make it happen. We're doing it for the first time, so it's hard to give you a cost example, but everybody working on it now is working on it in a volunteer basis. We have this small planning committee combining state agencies who are contributing, you know, taking on this project in addition to their regular work, seeing the value in it. And then we are also recruited a handful of non-government organizations that are in the conservation field so that this doesn't just become sort of a government project. We have a memorandum of understanding that all the parties participating have signed, and we have a challenge grant from the Cinnabar Foundation of $10,000. We're trying to match that now. It'll be a combination of, you know, funds we can raise and contributed services.
What's the timeline here?
The timeline is to have our inaugural event on December 6th of 2014. And I think it kind of fits a conservation theme and a Montana theme in that 2014 is the 150th anniversary of Montana Territory Declaration. Montana became a territory 150 years ago. And the Wilderness Act was passed 50 years ago. So we have a couple of events that are occurring anniversaries that are worth lining up with.
And if somebody is listening and would like to find out more, what's the best way to go about doing that?
The best way to go about doing that is, I guess, listen to public radio.
We like that.
And we're going to, you know, start putting out the periodic news releases and things of that nature. Then we'll send out notices. We'll build a mailing list of conservation organizations and individuals who we think might have an interest in this. And we'll have our first sort of inaugural event and then the induction of our first group of honorees on the 6th of December 2014, which is the target date. You know, that's a ways off. We do not want to change that, but, you know, we're still doing this for the first time.
Yeah. And it should be mentioned that you're working for some tribal representation as well, yeah?
Yes, that's right. They gave us what we tend to call pristine Montana, and I think there are members of that part of our culture that continue to contribute to conservation and restoration of what was lost in the process of settling this place.
I've been speaking with Jim Posowitz, known for so many things in Montana, but for today's purposes, the Montana Outdoor Hall of Fame. Mr. Posowitz, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for chatting with us.
Well, thank you for calling.